Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Stories. Storytelling. Throughout the ages of time, stories have captured our attention. We have found ourselves and find ourselves listening, relating, and connecting to the story as well as to the person of the story. Having thoughts of, I'm not alone. You are not alone. We are in this thing called life together. Hey everybody, this is Dr. Deb Lind and welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Every week we bring amazing guests, whether they're subject matter experts, inspiring souls, forward thinkers, or perhaps even wounded healers. In June is PTSD Awareness Month. And here at PTSD and Beyond, we've been working on something pretty special for you. Something that you can listen to each and every day. Each day in the month of June, we'll be sharing the unique story of someone with lived experience with trauma and PTSD. We'll learn a little bit about their journey, how they're progressing through a healing journey, as well as hear their post-traumatic growth and how they've found meaning, purpose, and a superpower in the process of healing. We got to let you guys know that we are extremely grateful for all the folks that have shown tremendous courage to come on the podcast and share their stories and inspire everyone to listen to this podcast around the globe. We've had folks from England, Canada, New Zealand, India, Malaysia, Australia, the United States, and beyond. We felt that there was no better way to honor PTSD Awareness Month and to share the stories of our brothers and sisters from around the world and acknowledging their trauma, their challenges with PTSD, but also to teach us and to inspire us, allowing us a glimpse of their healing journey. We here at PTSD and Beyond hope that these stories will touch your heart and touch your soul and offer you inspiration and compassion for others suffering from PTSD, from folks that are affected by PTSD, as well as yourself. These are the powerful lived experience stories of real people. They are the champions who keep striving, who keep healing, who keep growing, and who keep living. We hope that you enjoy the PTSD and Beyond 30 Stories in 30 Days, honoring PTSD Awareness Month. Remember to please share these episodes with folks that you feel and you know will benefit. Remember to subscribe, like, and share. So let's give a listen to today's guests. 30 Stories in 30 Days starts now. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond, and today we've got another Share My Story segment. You know, story sharing goes all the way back, did you know, 30,000 years. I mean, how cool is that? And there's something about story sharing that just captivates us. It makes us just want to sit and listen, and that is the reason why you're here today. You are here to listen to one of our guests, and this person, guys, I'm going to let you know, he's got his own podcast. It's called the Mental Corner Podcast, and we're going to have a direct link into the summary bio so you can hook up there. It's one of the top 5% podcasts globally, so you know what? I'm doing the whole Mike Myers, you know, I'm bound, he can see me, I'm not worthy kind of thing, and it drops twice a week, which is super cool. So once on Thursday and again on Sunday, and you know, our podcast drops every Friday, which is cool, so guess what? You'd have a, you know, triple bonus. And let's welcome Harry Povin to the PTSD and Beyond podcast. How are you, Harry?
I'm really great. How are you? Thank you for having me on, by the way.
I'm doing all right. You're quite welcome. Thanks for coming on, for heaven's sake. I mean, you're just like way up there with podcast productions, and you're here to share your story, which even makes it even more beautiful. I mean, so, you know, just
pause for a moment here. I mean, when you talk about like transparency, vulnerability, walking the talk, I mean, it doesn't get any more authentic than like right now.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Yeah.
And you're so humble and modest about it. You're like, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, like, this is just so amazing. This is so great. So story sharing and the power of story sharing. Someone's here today because they want to hear what you have to say. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to try to compress it as best as I can, because it kind of, if I were to really sit down and think about it, I think it kind of branches all the way to like when I was 10 years old or very young. I was very young. And I was a great, I had a great childhood, you know, growing up and everything. I had a great family, great friends, great support system, but I got bullied a lot as a kid. And as a kid, you know, especially a young boy, when you're an emotional kid, you get targeted immediately, especially when I was growing up. I say that like I'm an old man, I'm still really young, but like, you know, mental health has progressed so significantly, even in like 5 years. Mm-hmm. So when I was in elementary school, I was a very emotional guy. And I wasn't like the other boys. I have no interest in cars, or like, I didn't really care for sports until I got into them later. I was more concerned with like Disney princesses and like animals. Like those were my two big focal points growing up. So I was an easy target for bullying. And I think that's kind of where my lack of self-worth or my negative self-image kind of started. That's where it kind of was brewing. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, you know, you're taught as a young boy, you know, man up, don't have these feelings. You shouldn't feel that way because you're a guy, just tough it out. And I did. And I just kind of suppressed how I felt. And then if you kind of fast forward a little bit, my parents went through a divorce. I still love them both. It all worked out in the end, but you know, it happened when I was still fairly young. And I was the oldest kid, and I wasn't only the middle child between my parents and my kids kind of relaying info. I was relaying info between my mother and my dad. Okay. And as a kid, you know, still in elementary school, by the way, that takes a lot of your innocence away. Mm-hmm. And looking back, like, you know, if this were to happen to me now, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, you're grown up, you realize like the world isn't a fairy tale. But as a kid, I loved Disney. Like I thought the world was a fairy tale. So when my parents split up and I kind of got a look behind the curtain, I was like, whoa, you know, I aged pretty quick. And there was no outlet for me in that regard. I didn't really have anyone to turn to. I just wanted to keep my family together. So I never got to talk about how I felt. And then when I would reach out to people, I would try to talk to them. They would go, why would you say that? Like, how do you think that makes me feel? Or again, man up. Man up was kind of like the two words that my entire life just kept coming back. And so every time I would try to open up, man up kept coming back. And then eventually I was like, you know what? They're right. I should just man up. And I would suppress my feelings all through high school. And I was like, as long as my friends and family are happy, I'm good. You know? So I put the mask on. I didn't want anyone to worry about me. I was the happy guy. I was the jokester. I was the athlete. Like from surface level, it looked like I had everything going for me. But inside, I was still struggling. The beauty about high school is that you have so many distractions and you're still living at home. So, you know, I would wake up in the morning, I'd go to swim practice at like 4, I'd wake up at like 4:15 a.m. I would go swim, go straight from swimming to school, focus on school and friends. Right after school, I'd go to rugby practice. Right after rugby practice, I'd go to swimming. Mm-hmm. Right after swimming, I'd come home, eat dinner with the family, go to bed, and the cycle continued. So I didn't really have any time to sit down and ponder how I felt or, you know, register what was going on. So through high school, I thought it was fine. I just never talked about how I felt because, you know, guys don't talk about that. There were points where in high school, you know, I would have a bad race at swimming or something wouldn't go according to my quote unquote plan, and I would lash out. So I was labeled a hothead for a lot of my life because, you know, growing up as a boy, you're taught anger and you're taught happiness and there's no in between. A guy from my podcast brought that up, and it rings so true. You know, like the people I would look up to in swimming, the only way they'd react to like a bad race would be punching lockers, hitting their head on the wall, screaming, swearing at people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what, you know, I took personally. I took that. And so every time something inconvenient happened or I had a bad race, that's how I would react. And so people started walking eggshells around me. and this whole narrative of I'm not a good person, it started building. Now, if you fast forward a little later to when I got to university, that's kind of the first time there were no distractions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're alone in university for the beginning portion anyway. So that's kind of when I first had the opportunity to sit down and go, oh goodness, there is a lot going on here. Mm-hmm. Like I had a lot to unpack and it was overwhelming. And, you know, people my age, like everyone actually, not just people my age, but you're not taught how to deal with that stuff.
Right.
You know, I didn't know the word depression until I got diagnosed with it when I was 19. So that's kind of where that journey started of realizing what was going on, because, you know, I was having these outbursts and I was having these thoughts and, you know, my depression was getting really bad at university. And the girl I was with, she was like, you need to go to therapy, or, you know, you need to go see a doctor, see what's wrong. And I, you know, I'm stubborn. So I was like, no, come on, I'm good. But then eventually I went, cause I was like, whatever, it'll make you happy. I get in there and, you know, they tell me I have depression and I reject it immediately, you know, because it's like, you know, the only idea I had of mental illness was like in those movies or right. People who like we had people in my high school who had like schizophrenia or bipolar, and people would immediately just like kick them to the side. They wanted nothing to do with them. They thought they were weird. So that's the only idea of mental illness I had. So I was like, I can't be like those people. I refuse to be like those people. I'm the athlete, you know, I'm the boyfriend, I'm the friend, I'm the family member. Like I'm good. I'm the happy guy. Excuse me. So I refused to believe it. And then it just kept getting worse all throughout university. And it was putting a strain on my relationships. It was putting a strain on my friendships, my family. Like it was just getting really bad, but I didn't want to open up because of the man up culture that I grew up in. So, you know, I could go on forever about, you know, what happened in university and the messes that went on. But basically in my last year of university was kind of when things almost got too close. And that's when I really wanted to just end my life. And I remember it was like the scariest feeling in the world, because I didn't fear death. I almost wanted it to happen. It was like something inconvenient would happen in my last year. And I was like, well, I'm not going to be here much longer anyway. So that's not a problem. Or like I found comfort in the idea of not being there anymore.
Wow.
So then one night, you know, I'm not going to get into details, of course, but I remember, you know, right after my attempt happened, like the idea of my family and my friends was in my head. And I was like, you know what? Like, I need to do this for them. Like, cause I can't keep doing this. Like I keep pushing it, my recovery to the side, and eventually I'm going to die. Like I'm not going to be here to see my family or my friends anymore. So that's when I started getting the help. And then I was invited to speak at a men's only mental health panel at my university. And I had done a couple articles and stuff for like the newspapers up here about mental health for like Bellet's Talk Day, but nothing too in depth, nothing too in depth. Because I was afraid of like how my family would react when they read it or how my friends would react. I was a captain of the swim team at the time. So I was like, would my teammates see me as less of a captain? And then eventually I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go in there and I'm just going to tell my story. And this was in front of 300 strangers plus a couple of people I knew. I was like pissing myself, for lack of a better term. I was terrified. And I remember just going, you know what? This is the moment that changes everything. So I blacked out and I told my story, and it was terrifying. But then for a week after, or a couple weeks after, I was getting messages from people I didn't even know. Wow. People I would have never talked to, about like, I went through something similar. My boyfriend went through something similar, like my family member. And that's when I started to realize, as cliche as it sounds, that stupid voice in my head was so wrong. And like, you know, I was always worried, like I was the only one going through stuff, which is not true at all. And that's kind of when I realized, like, a lot of us go through struggles. We just don't talk about it, especially as guys.
Right.
And then that's where the inspiration for, you know, my podcast and my platform kind of started. I think that's, and then here we are.
And here we are inspiring other people and talking about, I mean, we heard so many things here, and thank you so much for sharing your story. And I can say that I'm glad that you're here. I know that there's always somebody who's listening. You're welcome. There's always somebody who's listening that has felt that way. I can say that I have felt that way also when I was 16, not wanting, just like, why am I even here? And here we are. And to share that ways that mental health has affected your life, relationships, reality, and the perception of self, you know, what do I really think about myself? What are the thoughts? Who's really driving this vehicle, right? Are they my thoughts that's driving all of this? Or is there some sort of way that, you know, I can, you know, maneuver and control? And when you mentioned here about there were so many distractions, that's another coping mechanism that we see with people that are in our community, as well as others who, you know, share and visit with us about, I'm a workaholic, you know, I choose to be so busy that eventually I collapse because I'm exhausted because I can't think about the unthinkable, right? And one of the things that you say here and you said is that in this moment, this is the moment that changes everything. The moment you decided to do the presentation and to share your story and look at how everything has changed. What are other ways that mental health has affected your life? What are other ways that you can see, looking back at it now, that maybe something you didn't realize then, but you realize now?
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest by far is my confidence. I do work daily on that bad boy because, you know, after however many years of neglecting it, you got to put a lot of work in. But basically, you know, as an athlete, as a male athlete, you look up to like the Michael Phelpses and the Mike Tysons, like the shredded kind of super muscular athletes. I was never that guy. I was bigger, but in a world of swimming where most people are lean and skinny, I was big. I was one of the bigger guys on deck, and that always bugged me. And then once, you know, I was like with my mental health issues, I was already telling myself I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. So then I would get on the swim deck and I would be the least, like, you know, lean guy there. And it would just validate all the thoughts in my head. So it affected my confidence, but it also gave me a lot of body dysmorphia. And I still deal with that. I don't think I'm bad looking, but you know, you get the thought here and there. You always get the passing thought. You walk by a mirror. With the girl I was with in university, her room had a lot of mirrors and we would have to turn them around, because if we didn't, I would just stand in front of them and like look at myself before bed and be like, look at you, you're disgusting. I was in the best shape of my life. Like right now I would go back to that in a heartbeat. But at the time, you know, it causes a lot of body dysmorphia and confidence issues. I think that would be the biggest, that would definitely be the biggest one. I think another one would be, you know, my temper was horrible. Mm-hmm. And that was just, I was just a product of my environment, honestly. Like, you know, as I mentioned, all the guys I looked up to, that's how they reacted to things. And so that's all I knew. But it started getting really bad, like to the point where I wouldn't remember how I lashed out. Like that's just, I would black out and I would come to and be like, oh crap, like my knuckles are bleeding, my head's hurting. It was like something completely took over my body. And that when you hate yourself, hating yourself is one thing, but when you hate yourself and you're terrified of yourself, it's a whole different animal. Yeah. And so that's kind of what I was dealing with, not only in high school, but also big time in university. So those would be the two big things I think I would say.
Wow. I got a really good visual there of, you know, we learn so many things about ourselves through cinema and movies and music. And when you talk about, you know, confidence and standing there in front of mirrors, it made me think about the power of doing mirror work, where mirror work can actually be exposure, you know, techniques for some people. And I can resonate a lot with what you're saying about certain parts of your body. For me, it's my hair. The abuser would do things to my hair and deliberately make me not look like a girl. And then when I had long hair, it got all cut off. And so my hair is like a big deal for me. It's like, it's just gotta be a certain way. Otherwise I start, you know, fussing with it. But my, to the point is that the awareness component, when you start doing the work and you continue doing the work, then you're comfortable with actually having the awareness as well as comfortable with sharing. These are things that used to affect me in a certain way, and they don't any longer, which is great, because then we show people how we grow and how when you do this work for yourself, that there is growth and mm-hmm. we continue to grow. What are ways that you've grown because of mental health?
Man. Well, I think the first one, kind of going back to the body dysmorphia thing, like I still deal with that stuff. You know, I still look in the mirror every now and then and go like I flinch a little, especially with the pandemic, you know, you add a couple of pandemic pounds. But I remember I was doing the work for a while. I think it was a couple months in. So I guess not that long, but I was a couple months into like therapy and I'd gone on antidepressants and I was doing the self work. Like I was doing everything. And I remember I had a mirror in my room and I remember waking up and going, you actually look pretty good today. That just that one little thought, I never had that. And then I remember going to the library, like at my campus, and people were like, you look lighter. Like, have you lost weight? And I'm like, no, I actually haven't. They're like, but you're carrying yourself differently. So that's when I started. It came like months after hard work. Mm-hmm. But that's when I started noticing little changes, you know, my confidence, my posture, it all changed. My, another one of the biggest things that I've kind of noticed recently was that I was a very close-minded person in the sense of if you mess up in a way, you can't forgive them. Mm. Or if someone does something to you, they're dead to you. Like that was always my mindset. Just based on things that happened in my childhood. But I was always like, no one can make a mistake. And then I started making a mistake pretty much every day with how I had lashed out or how I would say, like how I would talk to people or how I would treat people, just because that wasn't me. It was just, you know, things coming out. So, you know, after doing a lot of work and stuff, I'm way more forgiving now. And I understand that like people go through stuff and that's not who they are. It just took me being in those shoes to realize it. And that forgiveness component, honestly, I was having a talk with someone earlier today and they said it great. They made it a great point was it's not for them. You know, you forgive for yourself. Mm-hmm. You can't let whatever happened between you and a person like weigh on you forever. That's not fair to you.
Right.
And you don't have to talk to that person ever again. Mm-hmm. Like that's not the whole point. Is if you forgive them for what happened and move forward, it gives you a lot of not only closure, but you feel lighter in a sense.
Yeah.
And you're not dwelling on it. So that definitely helped a lot.
That's awesome. Forgiveness is something that I think we as peer-led advocates is something that we need to talk more about. Like what is forgiveness? What does forgiveness look like? I think that forgiveness and stigma are two words that really we need to as advocates and advocacy work to focus a lot more action on and education mm-hmm. on. And your explanation of it is beautiful. When we grow, there's always continued growth. You don't ever yes. stop growing. And so the growth and growth over time and growing over time, you develop a superpower. And I love this question because people usually laugh when I ask it. So, Harry, what's your superpower?
You know what's funny is when you sent that email out, it was like a month ago or something about the questions, and mm-hmm. I read that, and I sat down and I pondered it. I was like, what is my superpower? And honestly, like I kept going back to it. Like, you know, I could say a couple different, like, you know, I know how to talk to people well, or I have a big heart, like I care a lot. But honestly, like my biggest superpower and the reason I'm still here, and it sounds a little ridiculous, is because I'm so stubborn. Because, you know, my brain was telling me, end your life. And inside somewhere, I was like, you can't tell me what to do because mm-hmm. I'm still here. You know, when I would go to therapy, I had seven different therapists and the first six didn't work out after the first session, I guess. They were all terrible experiences. But, you know, after the first one, I was like, there's no way that therapy works for some people and not for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go again. And then after the second time, it didn't work. And then after the third time, fourth time, until eventually I got it. So just that stubbornness and, you know, kind of determination to prove, I like a chip on your shoulder, I guess, in a sense. You're like, wait a minute. Like, I'm not the only person going through this, but it seems like I'm struggling alone. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. I'm going to prove people wrong. I'm going to prove myself wrong. So I guess that's my superpower. It can be annoying. It can definitely be my fault at times. It's my biggest flaw, but it is also my superpower.
That's awesome. I love it. I love the determination and the way that you explain it. It reminds me of the question when you're in a job interview, right? And the HR person says, so tell me what your strengths and your weaknesses are. And yep. It's always based on what perspective, what culture, mm-hmm. what company culture, because my extroverted direct communication in one culture would be perceived as, oh my gosh, this is a breath of fresh air. And in another culture, it would be like, oh my gosh, she's so aggressive. You know what I mean? Yeah. It depends on the perception of the culture. And here you're saying like, you know what? I can be perceived as stubborn. Even my self-perception is stubborn. And then the more of the discovery and the peeling back of the layers, you're like, yeah, no, you know what? I'm actually a really determined individual and I'm persistent. And persistence and determination can equate to a healthy stubborn, which is beautiful. Which is
exactly. Beautiful.
And there's always somebody right now who's probably either A, laughing, B, just completely resonates with everything that we're saying, or C, a little bit of both. And to that person who is still with us, and thank you that you still are, and listening to Harry's story, what would you say to that person right now who, you know, like you've really, you know, reined them in and they're like, yeah, I'm really here. I'm really present. And what you're saying is just totally jiving with me right now. What would you say to that person?
Well, first off, thank you for staying. I appreciate that because sometimes I think we mentioned off camera, like, you were talking about how people say your voice is soothing and you don't see it. I'm the same way. I'll tell a story and in my head, I'm like, can you stop talking? Because I don't want to hear you anymore. So if you are staying, thank you for proving my voice wrong. Something that I would say to someone who resonates with what I am saying. Oh man, I'm trying to, there's so many things, right? And you know, people get asked this question and you hit up all the cliches, but there's a reason those cliches are there, you know, like the, you are not alone, or the, you know, keep fighting, it's worth it. Like you say that to someone going through it and they kind of roll their eyes and they're like, oh God, I don't want to hear that garbage, but it's true. You know, there's a reason that cliche is there because it has some truth to it. But if I were to tell them one thing, I'm trying to put myself back in my shoes when I was a kid and kind of what I would have wanted to hear mm-hmm. when I was going through everything. Maybe like, I guess the biggest one would be like, it's not your fault, because I put my, you know, for things I didn't understand or things that I had no control over, I kind of put the blame on myself mm-hmm. and it just added this weight to me. And I think that's kind of where, you know, this decline of mental health started and kind of what made it worse. So I think that'd be one thing I would say is like, it's not your fault, like simple, but effective. And then also like, man, keep fighting. Seriously. Like we want you here. I want you here.
Like if you're listening.
Yeah. We want you here, man. Life's a party. Let's treat it like it. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be so glum. Get the work. People love you out there. Even if you don't feel it, like, I hope you feel it through this microphone that I've got. I love you. They're going to put my Instagram in the link. I'll listen to you. There's always someone. The beauty about social media and like, it, you know, at times we feel so disconnected because it's not person to person, but the beauty with it is that we're more connected now than ever.
Yep.
Not in the most effective way, but in a way where, you know, 3 seconds from now, you could reach out to someone who will listen.
Right.
So don't be afraid to reach out. I know people say that all the time. And I know, you know, people are probably rolling their eyes when they hear it, but seriously, it's so worth it. And reaching out saved my life, and fighting saved my life. So just keep going, man. I believe in you.
I love that. Reaching out saved my life. And to the person who's here still with us right now, you've taken a step to reach out, and we will have all of Harry's information in his summary bio, a link to the podcast as well as his Instagram account. And of course, the, you know, no one is ever alone. I think that's the beauty of where we all come together. There's space for us all to share our skills and to create a space for people to whenever they want to walk in and wherever they want to walk into, whether it's your podcast, my podcast, someone else's podcast, another space on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. There are many spaces of people where we've come together to say, guess what? Whenever you need somebody, someone is here 24/7, 365. It doesn't matter if you're in Australia, Malaysia, India, the UK, Canada, the United States, Mexico, Latin America, South America, Africa, Europe, Asia. There is always somebody who is available. And I think that's the beauty of all of us just collaborating and again, sharing stories to inspire other people so that they do feel it and they can resonate with somebody. And yeah, when you resonate and you connect with somebody, that whole feeling of feeling alone completely goes away. Cause then you feel like, you know what, somebody gets me and there's someone else out there that's like me. And Harry, thank you so much for coming on today. Truly. It was a pleasure. Really. You're an amazing individual and I can't thank you enough for being here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. All right, you guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond. Remember, you got to subscribe. And when you hit that subscribe button, you get a, what do you get? You get a sneak preview to every episode that drops early. So go ahead and do that. And if you like this episode, make sure you give us a rating. The more ratings that we get, then again, of course, you know, our outreach expands and put some comments on there too. And remember, if you do connect with Harry, make sure you say, hey man, I heard you on PTSD and Beyond and connect with them because he is available. So you guys make it a good one and we'll see you again next time.
We hope you enjoyed today's guest and their story on 30 Stories in 30 Days on the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button as well as to like and share and comment and make a note because, guys, tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, we've got another story on 30 Stories in 30 Days at PTSD and Beyond.